moving on to the Merritt case now, where the other side's pro se and no brief was filed. So say you will have any time necessary to save any time for rebuttal. You have up to 15 minutes. You can assume, counsel, that we've had the opportunity to read your brief, and you may begin when ready.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I am Mark Budner, guardian ad litem for Ms. LaDawn King, and I first want to thank the Court for accommodating my schedule and rescheduling the argument on this case. It was very important to me and my family. As Your Honors know from the record in this case, this is a divorce, and we contend that Judge Rausch erred in admitting evidence of my client's conviction of malicious wounding and possession of a firearm in connection with that felony.
Mr. Bodner, this is Judge Petty. I'm looking at two cases, Peterson versus Commonwealth, that's at 225 Virginia 289, and Collins versus Commonwealth, which again is a Supreme Court case at 269 Virginia 141. Both of those cases stand for the proposition that an appeal does not eradicate or do away with the conviction. It simply suspends execution of the judgment. And both of those cases stand for the proposition that an order of conviction is admissible pending while the case is on appeal. How do you get around either of those two cases?
Well, in the second proposition, I don't know that I can get around it. I would just point out to the Court, and maybe this case is distinguishable in some way, I understand that the conviction continues in effect. For instance, the defendant is not released, and the Court honors the conviction as remaining in effect. But what happens when subsequent, and I understand that Judge Rausch didn't have the capacity, none of us could, to see what would happen with the case afterwards. What happens when the conviction is reversed? What is the effect of that? Then you can possibly have the situation, which I think public policy would discourage, of conflicting outcomes from the same court. That is, an acquittal, possibly, coming down the road. I don't maintain that that's what happened in this case, and I can clarify that for Your Honors. On the one hand, and a civil case in which the judgment rests upon a conviction that has since been vacated. I think that's something that the Court does not want to end up with. And for that reason, I must confess, I don't know, I haven't read either the Peterson or the Collins case, but if they are in fact distinguishable from this one, I would say that that would be a proper grounds for finding a different result in this case. And if the Court accepts my position, then there simply is no corroboration for the grounds of divorce in this case. And as Your Honors know, both as a matter of law under Section 20-99.2 of the Code and as a matter of public policy, as announced in the Clark case, which we cited in our briefing, we didn't cite very many authorities because they're hard to find. It's both the law and the public policy of the Commonwealth that a divorce is not granted by default and that it must be corroborated. Good public policy indicates that you don't want parties colluding to obtain a divorce, therefore you have to have independent corroboration.
Ms. Judge Petty again, what exactly is the end game here? I mean, if we were to agree with you and reverse this case and remand it, it looks like the parties have been living separate apart for a period of at least a year. The case goes back. The divorce is granted on that basis. The grounds for divorce don't appear to have affected anything involving equitable distribution. What is the purpose of all of this? What's to be achieved?
Well, that's an excellent question that I confronted in deciding whether to pursue this on appeal, and I agree with Your Honor. I don't think that the end game affects equitable distribution. We didn't make any arguments challenging that. To simply answer Your Honor's question, the end game is that the Court reverses the Court's finding that there were sufficient grounds to grant a divorce on the grounds of cruelty, my client's cruelty, alleged cruelty towards Mr. King, and it finds that there is ground for divorce on the fact that the parties having lived separate and apart without interruption for more than a year, and everything else remains the same. So it simply wipes away the fault finding of divorce.
It sounds like like a poor use of judicial resources. It's almost a harmless error issue, if error at all.
Well, I respectfully disagree with Your Honor, because it has great meaning for my client. And I don't know if the court was able to keep up with this. I did make attachments to this, to our brief, showing two things. One, that a panel of this court, and again, I understand this is not something that the court can use for purposes of making its ruling, but I think it's of interest in that the panel on the criminal appeal reversed her conviction on account of the criminal court's failure to give an accident instruction to the jury, and that was appealed by the Commonwealth to the court en banc, and again, this court en banc reversed the conviction, saying that the circuit court erred in failing to give that accident instruction.
But so we did not exonerate the defendant. I mean, I'm assuming this is going back, that other case is back for retrial.
And
it's still effectively pending.
I agree with Your Honor. And in fact, to be totally candid with the court, my client was faced with a terrible option, and she accepted, which was to accept time served and enter an Alford plea, which in fact she did, or she could have proceeded to trial, at which she would have had the opportunity to seek exoneration. So the reality is that in this case, and I should point out to Your Honors, that decision was made in between the time that this case was originally scheduled for argument on October 6th and today's date.
So the conviction that you're complaining of is actually final at this time?
It is now, but let me hasten to add that even if the conviction was admitted into evidence, I also objected on relevance grounds, and even if the court found that it was final for Judge Rausch's purposes, I don't think that it's competent evidence to corroborate grounds for divorce. Because we don't know, and I don't think that the trial court could reasonably infer, or anybody could reasonably infer, that anybody involved in the court process, other than the complainant himself in the divorce, Mr. King, could corroborate what happened during the events in question that
let me ask you this, and this obviously is a little bit outside of what you're talking about in your brief and the theory of your case, but I just want to, I'm going back to the practicalities of what we're doing by, as suggested by Judge Beatty's question. Okay, so now we are aware, the record has essentially been supplemented, and we appreciate that, with the fact that your client entered an Alford plea, and obviously judges of this panel understand what an Alford plea is. It essentially, though, is a finding of guilt. From a theoretical standpoint, purely from a theoretical standpoint, could that finding of guilt, that conviction that now is outstanding, be used in a subsequent or in a furtherance of this proceeding to suggest the cruelty basis?
I suggest that it could not, for the reasons that the grounds for divorce have to be corroborated independent of the admissions of the party, or the parties, forgive me. So even knowing that she has entered this plea and the nature of the plea, I don't think that she can corroborate the grounds of divorce for me.
So your view would be that the fact that she has been convicted now of this wounding, and the fact that the defendant woke up and was wounded, could not suffice for proving a ground of divorce on a cruelty basis.
We now know that the basis for her conviction rests upon her Alford admission, in which she does not admit guilt.
No, not just that. It rests on the fact that she has now been convicted of it, and then we circle back to the fact that the defendant woke up and he was shot.
Yes, I agree. However, what is the corroboration of his complaint? Is it the fact of conviction, and what supports that fact?
What would be the difference then from the presentation of any circumstantial evidence? The circumstances are that the defendant woke up and he was shot, and now there is a determination that the person who is involved with him in some sort of dispute has now entered a Alford plea, where obviously she doesn't admit that she does anything, but there is circumstantial evidence that can be presented that she's been convicted of shooting him.
Well, that circumstantial evidence is entirely derivative of her plea.
And the fact that the victim woke up and he had a gunshot wound.
Well, that was the direct evidence. That was the direct evidence of the cruelty that he claims. But if, as the Virginia law, the statute requires, that the evidence be independent of the admissions of the parties, then the fact of the conviction cannot supplant the evidence that he's provided. I'm sorry, can't serve to supplement or corroborate the evidence that he's provided, the direct evidence of the cruelty. I suggest that he has to have some other independent evidence. There was some witness who saw something happening in that room, or there was a recording, or a child came down the stairs. There was something independent. But otherwise, I think what you're doing is affirming this finding of fault based upon basically her admission.
Well, the standard of proof in the context of this case is much less than it would be in a criminal trial. So let's look at it from the context of a criminal trial. What you're suggesting, sir, is that if a person wakes up and they are wounded, unless there's some other evidence to support how he got wounded other than the fact that he woke up with a wound, that case would fail because proof would not be beyond a reasonable doubt.
In a criminal situation, clearly. Yes, and in this case, because the statute specially requires that there be corroboration, it has to be something more than his waking up, and you have this simple case of, well, there's no other explanation, or it's a reasonable hypothesis about how this happened.
What is the quantum of evidence necessary to corroborate? Is it the same as in a criminal case, merely slight evidence of corroboration?
I think Your Honor is correct. I think the case law suggests, and I don't have any in front of me, but my remembrance of the case law is that the evidence of corroboration need be slight.
So isn't the fact that she was charged slight corroboration that he was shot?
Well, that's bootstrapping, in my opinion, with all due respect, Your Honor, because what that's saying is this guy, the complainant, went to the magistrate, appeared before the grand jury and said that this is what happened, and then we're using whatever document was issued based upon his testimony to corroborate his own claim. So, it's, in other words, it's just mirroring back what he says. How does that become corroboration?
Okay, so counsel, I think we understand your argument. If you want to summarize, and obviously we do understand your argument, you can feel free to do so.
Thank you very much, Your Honors. Again, I appreciate your patience, and I appreciate your remarks about the value of the appeal.
Very good, sir.
Thank you.
All right, the judges will now go into conference. We appreciate your presentation, counsel, and have a very good day.
Thank you.